Let me open us in prayer.
Heavenly Father, as we come to you this morning, we thank you for your grace and mercy in our lives. We thank you for the beautiful weather you've given us, for the protection you've given us. We thank you for this church and for the way you have provided for it for over 40 years. We pray that you would bless our time here this morning, bless our discussion, guide us as we seek to understand better the influence of Christianity and us on the world around us, and help us to truly appreciate all the good that has come from you and from Jesus Christ, your Son, in whose name we pray. Amen. All right, today we're going to talk about civilizing the uncivilized. I guess the first thing you need to do is define what civilized means. What does it mean to be civilized? Okay. What kind of rules are we talking about? I mean, we deal with rules in our lives all the time. My nephew, who was with me yesterday and last night, you know, he's a football referee. He's starting to do mostly Division I college. And we were talking about all the rule changes in college football, some of which, I'm not sure how you even call them, but. Yeah, so there's rules in sports. There's rules driving on the road, right? Yeah. There's suggestions anyway. But what do we mean when we say, you know, civilization is living by rules? We do, really. I mean, but there's another word for these rules or that we have, or laws. Ten Commandments. That's the basis of most of our rules. But what's the other word for rules that nobody likes to use? Laws. It's morals. That's what most of our laws are based on. It's a moral code. What do we hear about, and it was mentioned that the Ten Commandments are the basis of Western moral laws. What's the one thing we hear about that all the time from the non-Christians in the world? That's right. And don't force your morality on me. Right? So what happens when you don't have a constant set of morals or laws? Right, you have basically chaos. You don't hear the word so much anymore, but back in the time of the Depression, big political movement in the entire Western world was, and it actually combated both Western civilization and communism, but it was, now I lost the word, I had it, anarchism. What's anarchism? Anarchy. No rules. You know? That's right. And what did it say in the book of Judges? There were seven cycles in the book of Judges, and every one of them ends almost identically with the same terms. What was it? Right. Every man did as he pleased. I mean, that's part of what the book of Judges, I think, was all about, was you can't have that. You need this whole idea of having a moral code, a consistent moral code. And those people who say you can't force your morality on me, but they're forcing theirs on us. But this is what we mean when we say civilized, living under a code of some sort of laws. One of the things that's been lost in this country since its founding 200 some years ago, and actually it's been lost more in the last probably 50 or 60 years, is the idea that we are a nation of laws. What's different about our laws, or when we started out anyway, than the rest of the world, even the Western world, but the world in general? What's different about our laws from everybody else's?
Power to common man.
Power to common man. How?
It didn't give all that authority
to. No, it didn't. And what did we call that?
Yeah.
It was a democracy. Although we don't live in a democracy, and that's one of the big mistakes people keep making, is we live in a republic. It's a democratic republic, but it's not a democracy. What is democracy, by the way? What's the mob rule? Right. I mean, that's what the Athenians had. Everybody said, well, the Greeks had democracy. No, the Greeks had mob rule. They just had the upper class controlled the mob, which we have today. But one of the things that made us different here was we had. And that's why we didn't have kings and dukes and all the rest of that stuff. We had equal justice under the law in this country for years. I mean, even in the earliest part of our history, after we were founded, we had political leaders who violated these laws and they were charged. I don't know where that went, because now, you know, you've got people who are doing things that they should, that you and I would go to jail for, and it's like, well, but they're a politician, it's different. But this is civilization, is equal justice under the law. And whether the non-Christians like it or not, whenever they say something that somebody does is inhumane, they're referring to this. They don't like that idea when you point it out to them, but they're actually going back to the whole idea that we had. And all of this started with the Ten Commandments. And so you got What's unusual about the Ten Commandments compared to any other code? I mean, we always hear about Hammurabi's code and Justinian's code and all these other famous lawmakers of history. Right. These are God's laws. What else do we know about them? Think about them. When there's only 10. It's not a whole book here. It doesn't take up, you know, if you've ever been in a lawyer's office and seen the law volumes that he's got on his shelf, okay? There's only 10 laws that God gave us. What about those laws? How long are they? They're very short. Other than the first couple, in which God claims his own privileges as being, you know, the only God, can't have idols, keep the Sabbath. But most of them are like 4 or 5 words. Thou shalt not kill. Thou shalt not steal. Thou shalt not bear false witness. Shall not commit adultery. Shall not covet. Okay. What's different about that than even our laws, but most of the rest of the world, say the Islamic world or the world of China, North Korea? Don't they have those kind of laws? These are eternal. They would hope theirs are too. But what's different? Well, almost every one of those has murder is wrong, but, and there's a whole list of exclusions. You know, in a Muslim country, if a Muslim kills a Muslim, it's a death penalty. If a Muslim kills a Christian, it's a fine. Okay? If a Muslim kills his daughter because she embarrassed him, there's no problem. Okay? But what does God say about that? Period. It doesn't say, notice it doesn't say that a Jew shouldn't kill a pagan other than in war or in self-defense. It doesn't say that, you know, you can have adultery as long as it's with a slave and not with somebody else's wife, some other Jew's wife. There, God didn't make these laws just to say only for the Jews. Now, how do we know that? Ultimately, I mean, you can read it and it doesn't say anything about this is just for you. Well, ultimately, Christ expanded all this in the Sermon on the Mount. And notice he doesn't use any terms that say just for the Jews. He uses all these general terms, and he actually expands this. So murder is actually hating somebody. Adultery is actually thinking about it. You know. But this is the basis of our laws. It's the basis of all the laws in the world anymore. The ones that in the so-called civilized nations. One of the things that starts out in this chapter, in this book, is he talks about in the 19th century, during the 19th, the early, not, I guess mid-19th century, there was an attack on Christian missionaries in London, in London newspapers. And somebody wrote a letter to the London newspaper saying that person who wrote that should be happy if he ever gets shipwrecked on an island in the South Pacific, that there were missionaries there. Otherwise, he's liable to get eaten because most of the people on those islands, like Fiji, New Guinea, were cannibals. He said the only reason they won't get eaten is because Christian missionaries have been there and convinced them that wasn't a good thing to do. You know who wrote that letter? Charles Darwin. Darwin was not what we would call a Christian. And this was before his book, but he at least saw the practical application of Christianity and Christian laws in the world. And because Christian missionaries went into all these countries, in fact, there was another story earlier on in the book where a fellow during the Second World War got, I think he was shot down, and he ended up on an island in Fiji, and he met a native who was carrying a Bible. And he said to the native, you know, do you believe that? We don't believe that in our world anymore. And the native said, you're lucky I do. He said, otherwise you'd end up in here. Because his tribe was all cannibals. And because the Christians had come there and taught him about it, he was carrying a Bible around, he understood it. It had changed him. What's the alternative to civilization? What's the Greek term for it? Barbarism. Why do we talk about barbarians? Where does that term? That is a Greek term. Where did it come from? Anybody who wasn't Greek. And why did they call them barbarians? Remember, Bob? Yeah, it was bar, 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 bar. That's how they got barbarian. So that's where that term came from. But barbarism is the alternative to civilization. Most of the world outside of Israel at the time of Christ was barbaric. I mean, we've talked about child sacrifice earlier. And how in Rome, you know, destroying children was not a big deal. Even surrounding, when the Jews went into the Promised Land, after they received the Ten Commandments, it was one of the big complaints God showed about those people and what the Jews picked up from those people, the Canaanites, the Philistines, and such. Right, child sacrifice. You know, they were giving their children to Moloch, which was a pretty brutal god that they had. But I mean, frequently you hear that, you know, and God even one point says, that never entered my mind. Why would you even do that? I mean, in the Psalms you hear that, you know, children are a gift from the Lord. Why would you sacrifice them? In fact, they wanted more kids. But the nation of Israel was unusual in that they had these laws. And the other reason we know that these laws were more than just for Israel, because throughout Leviticus, God keeps referring to, this applies to you and the alien living among you and people visiting you. So unlike in especially in Muslim countries, I'm probably more familiar with that because I had a cousin that was in the Air Force and was in Turkey. And, her husband was in the Air Force. And somebody hit her car in the marketplace. She was out marketing and she had parked her car and somebody hit it. They found out who it was and she took him to court. So we had a Muslim and a Christian. At least an American. You know what the judge told her? It's your fault because you had your car parked there.
What's happening with insurance companies today in this country?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, nobody is blameless anymore. You know, and the insurance companies today will tell you, well, okay, yeah, we understand that your car was hit.
Right. when you look at this, is barbarism gone from the world? Actually, it's making a comeback. We're one of the, because of our Christian heritage, regardless of what the ACLU might tell you, we're one of the last nations to start seeing it in a big way. It's been all over the rest of the world for a long time. I get a lot of emails. It's amazing. In the last couple months, London, where they have very strict gun control laws, actually had a higher murder rate than New York City. Right. So we have this idea that we have to be civilized or we can be barbaric. And there really isn't any in between on that. I mean, you can't be partially civilized any more than you can be a little bit pregnant. That's right.
God's image in these people, even if they violate the law. You know, it's a good thing that we struggle over that. I have opinions about things, and so does everybody else, but I think the fact that we struggle over it tells us that there's a certain that influence of the Ten Commandments and the civilizations that are still there.
I mean, it's still in our laws. And the people who are fighting to protect or to save or to allow the illegal immigrants in this country don't like the Constitution, but they appeal to the Constitution for that very reason. I find it interesting that the first thing they tried to do, and they're still trying to do it, in this whole debate, is eliminate the term illegal alien and make it undocumented workers or whatever you want to call it, or immigrant. Because as soon as you say illegal alien, that means they have, illegal means you have broken a law. And, I mean, all you have to do is read about Mexico's illegal alien laws. If you go into Mexico illegally, they don't treat you nice. If you're lucky and they catch you close to the border, they just send you back. If you're unlucky and you're away from the border, they send you to prison for up to 10 years. And heaven forbid that you might have a weapon in the car, because that even adds to it. And there's been a few people, because that border's not very, it's pretty porous. We had a Marine that a couple of years ago he wasn't going to Mexico, he just got on the wrong road and ended up in Mexico, and they picked him up. And it took a long time for us to get him back out of prison. Because he had some guns in the car. But you're right. I mean, we have this, and I have no problem with giving them the right to have a trial. You know, I have a problem when they have extra legal rights.
Right.
Right. It does. Our discussions in this country over capital punishment, or now we keep distorting that because we have a strong group that pushes this whole idea of victim mentality. It's like, well, you know, you can't send that kid from the ghetto to prison because he wasn't raised properly, so he doesn't know any better. It's like, and yet those same people, this kind of illustrates the story. There's a group here that has a raptor farm. They rescue injured hawks, owls, raptor birds, and try to rehabilitate them, or at least care for them. And they have a small place. I don't even know where it's at. I've only met them at sportsman shows and stuff. They also have a golden eagle, which is a great thing to see. But you don't get close to it. I mean, this thing is about this high, its beak about that big, and claws it. But anyway, this is how people think, some of these people think. They would put the birds out on a sunny day, and on perches, they'd be chained. A lot of them couldn't fly anyway, but they would be chained out on perches in the front yard area so they'd get sunlight and sunshine and stuff. And one day, a neighbor's dog, a German Shepherd, was loose, came over, and killed a couple of the birds. So they complained to the police about it. And the neighbor said, well, you know, he's a German Shepherd. He's just doing what's natural. You can't do anything about that. Okay, so they put Cody out there. Cody's the golden eagle. The dog came back. The dog didn't go home. Now the neighbor complained. And they said, wait a minute. It's an eagle. He did what he was trained to do. German Shepherd's not a match for a golden eagle, I guarantee you. Not one that can still see. And I mean, Cody was blind in one eye, but I guess he just ripped the dog apart. I probably fed on him at the same time. But it's like, you know, on one side, we can't help ourselves. On another side, they can't, you know, you got to put up with it. Or we don't want to do that. I remember there was also a case downtown, a bunch of peaceniks. Let all these white doves go one day. We have peregrine falcons living downtown. Yeah. And all of a sudden, this falcon comes out of nowhere and takes out one of these white pigeons. And everybody went berserk. I'm thinking, you know, they recognize that as food, right? But they thought that was horrible. But yet, you know, you have shootings in the Hill District, and, well, they don't know any better. My point is that at some point, we, regardless of whether our parents raised us right, whether we were raised by parents, we should know better. I mean, all you have to do is look around you. All you have to do is read the paper, if you can read. But, you know, it used to be that ignorance of the law was no excuse. But that seems to have gone by the wayside to a large extent. And we don't have it. But that law is the basis of civilization. What else do we know about our laws or the Ten Commandments in particular that's different than what the world likes or wants? What about the Ten Commandments? What do we know about them? They're restrictive. They're intended to be restrictive because the first four are how we deal with God. The last six are how we deal with each other. Okay? And they hate this. They are I knew there was a letter in there. But they're absolute. Those laws are absolute. God doesn't, there's no buts in there. There's no ifs, ands, or buts in the Ten Commandments. When it says, thou shalt not kill, it doesn't say except. It just says, you don't do that. When it says, thou shalt not steal, it doesn't say, if you're needy, you can get away with it. I mean, I hear this all the time in the game laws is sometimes people say, well, you know, the reason those people were poaching is they need the meat. We got lots of social service things that'll get you food in this country, probably more than most people ever realize. But, you know, there's no justification in God's law for anything outside that law. Now you make the case, you know, in the case of thou shalt not kill, that because of what he subsequently tells them, you're allowed to protect yourself. You're allowed to, you know, in war, that's legitimate. But just to murder somebody, you look like you have something to say, Bob. That's right. That's right.
Covet my things, don't commit adultery with my wife, don't try to take my things, don't take my life from me. That's largely what the Ten Commandments are saying. By restraining that, how much more peaceful we are when people don't do that. I mean, most of the crime we have are somebody did something out of bounds, went beyond what was theirs. That's what crimes are mostly about.
That's right. I mean, whether it's a crime of property or a crime of personal attack. Yeah.
The commandment says obey your parents, but what if they're evil and they want you to do evil? So you would obey God instead of your parents.
But the Fifth Commandment doesn't say obey your parents. The Fifth Commandment says honor your parents. There's a difference between honoring your parents and just flatly obeying your parents. I mean, we're told in the Bible that we're to obey the rulers. The king, it talks about the king and the emperor, we're to obey them. But then there's a clause that says, unless they're telling you to do something that's against God's rules, I mean, God takes supremacy here. And so, you know, but we have these absolute rules. And that's where we get into this equal justice under the law. Those are rules that are absolute. I mean, thou shalt not steal. But you know, you need to pay your taxes, unless you're a congressman, I guess, because most of them don't, at least not pay at all. And they write the laws. But it's interesting, you talked about these are all negative. What did our founders do when they wrote the Constitution? What's in the Bill of Rights? What's the one repetitive term in the Bill of Rights? Over and over again, thou shalt, or the Congress shall not. Now, some people think our Constitution is restrictive, but who's it restricting? The government. Doesn't say, there's none of those shall nots that apply to me, personally. They all apply to the government. You know, the First Amendment. The Congress shall not make any law restricting religion or the free practice thereof or freedom of speech or freedom of press. That's for the government. The same thing with the Second Amendment. You know, Congress shall not make any law limiting the right of citizens to bear arms. But I think our founding fathers got this idea from the Ten Commandments, because God keeps saying, "Thou shalt not." They said it too. But what does the modern world want? We don't want absolutes. Relativism. That's what we're trying to get to in this country now, is relativism. It's relative ethics, you know, where we say, yeah, you shouldn't lie, but in this case, it's all right. You know. And maybe in some cases, like yesterday, my daughters lied to us about what was going on. And but this is what we're trying to get to in this country, it seems like, is relative ethics, relative morals. And where does that lead? Right? Nowhere good. I was in the service during the Vietnam War. Actually, the Vietnam War is why I got out of the service, because I was supposed to be a career. But since then, I have, and this actually starts in the Korean War with the UN, but since then, I have kind of looked at what we've done in terms of Korea, Vietnam, Iraq, Afghanistan. Why haven't any of those worked? Why haven't any of our... I mean, we spent...
Because they never followed the rules of war.
Well, they never followed the rules of war. That was the big problem in Vietnam, and that's why I got out, because I realized that a bunch of old men in suits back here were making military decisions over there. They had no idea what was going on. And I guarantee you, if they'd have put on a uniform, sent them to the front lines, they'd have changed the rules. I mean, the funniest thing that in all those wars that struck me was, you know, you can't shoot civilians. Well, you come over here and tell me who's a civilian and who's not, because I guarantee you that right now in Afghanistan, you know, they aren't running around with signs on saying, "I'm Taliban." They all dress alike. You know, even in some of the cases where we bomb villages and they say, "Oh, you're killing all these civilians." They go in and they find all these young men. But somebody's gone and taken all the weapons before the UN people get there. And they were civilians. But why won't that work? Why will us getting involved in these places work? And during George Bush's presidency, we called it regime change or some various other terms like that. What were we trying to do in all of these cases? In South Vietnam, and then Korea's a little different. We were actually assaulted in that. But what were we trying to do? Manage it instead of win it. We definitely were doing that. But what was the war all about? All right? We were trying to establish democracy. Why did that not work, and will that not work?
They didn't want it.
Why didn't they want it?
They wanted to live their life the way they wanted, and they didn't. We were coming in on their territory, telling them how to run their country, and they didn't want any part of it. I mean, it was quite clear in Vietnam, you know, the South Vietnamese, when we came over, they backed off and said, okay, this is, you know, you fight the war. We're happy where we are. But right. You guys want to kill each other, that's fine with us. We're just sitting back. But every time we handed them a gun to try to teach them how to shoot it, they didn't want any part of it.
That's right. In fact, towards the end, Nixon had that idea of Vietnamization, which was almost a total disaster. The first calf hadn't stuck around. North Vietnam would have marched into Saigon a lot sooner than what they did. But what's the real reason why we can't establish democracy in the Middle East or in Vietnam or in any of those countries?
They don't have a moral basis.
Right.
Establishing our kind of system.
And why don't they?
Because of their religious background.
Right. Because they don't have a Christian background. Because they don't understand the whole principle of these Ten Commandments and absolute laws. Yeah, the South Vietnamese peasants, I mean, they just wanted to be left alone. They just wanted to raise their rice and their pigs and you know, just leave us alone. And the U.S. came through during the day and roughed up a few villagers, maybe even shot a few. And at night, the Viet Cong came and did the same thing. And those people were kind of in the middle. And you find the same thing in the Middle East right now. You know, we go into areas in Afghanistan, and we might find a few weapons, and there's some problems there. But after we leave, the Taliban comes in, and they're just as bad as or worse than we are. Right.
All these other things. And so that when we defeat them after World War II, the Japanese have already wanted to become westernized. They're almost a European country. And so even though they don't have the moral basis, you know, from like their traditional religions, they've adopted, they decided to make it, you know, to adopt it themselves. They didn't resist it, they adopted it. And that's one reason why it works. Sort of like somebody comes, you know, I brought a foster child into my home that was 16 years old and abided by the rules, the kid would benefit from rules even if it had been trained as to why they should obey the rules.
That's right. There are some places where it has.
But generally speaking, when people don't want it or when they're committed to a different philosophy, it doesn't work.
Right. And even in the case of Japan, I mean, have you ever seen pictures of what Japan looked like after we got done? I mean, even before Hiroshima and Nagasaki, I mean, you look at what we did to those cities. And it should have been a big warning to the Japanese that we did not touch Hiroshima and Nagasaki, most of the bombing campaigns, until we dropped those two other bombs. But yeah, the Japanese are very practical people, and they wanted to adopt Western.
Yeah, most people want to adopt democracy.
And even their democracy is not what we would consider a democracy, because their people are very subjective. You know, they're willing to put up with being pushed around by their government and their companies. You talk to some of the workers over there. I mean, I used to deal with some of them in my job, and it was like, these people, they actually will commit suicide because they didn't please their boss. It's like, I just quit.
You know, it's amazing, too, about Japan is, you know, they've accepted democracy and they live kind of
No, they don't.
I remember when I was in the OP, we would send missionaries over to Japan, and they would be there for years and come home and say, "Got nothing to report." You know, saved one, two people. That's
We have
one or two people would come to the to salvation, but they're just so staunchly set in their ways that they don't want anything to do with Christianity.
And we have, in this church, as long as I've been here, supported two groups of missionaries over there. The Linda Carner, we used to have Charlene Hatmaker. I don't know whatever happened to her. But and Linda Carner, and then Jackson. No. There's another family that was over there. And they've been there for over 40 years. And Linda's been here, back here several times. It's a very hard nut to crack.
The Japanese people don't harass the Christian people.
No, they don't. They just ignore them, pretty much. Although I think Linda's probably had more effect than some, because she teaches these, it's kind of a English second language type class, but it's based on the Bible. And she does very, she seems to do pretty good with that. But, I mean, going back to this, where does, where do we see the influence of Christ in history first? Or the most? Anybody have any ideas where it shows up? Early in say, the first millennium? Charlemagne? It actually goes a little before Charlemagne. Constantine. I mean, up until the time of Constantine, there was a law in the books in Rome that to become a Christian was a capital offense. Some people like Nero, and started with Nero, and some of those other emperors enforced it, and others winked at it until Constantine and Justinian. But it was a capital offense. But yet, what did the Christians do? They just kept living like Christians. And it showed. There were several comments here. Maybe I can't find it. Okay, here it is. The general picture of Christian morals in this period, and they're talking about Rome in the second, third century, was one of piety, mutual loyalty, marital fidelity, and a quiet happiness in the possession of a confident faith. The young Pliny, who was a pagan, was compelled to report to Trajan, who was the emperor, and another pagan, that the Christians led peaceful and exemplary lives. Galen, another pagan, described them as so far advanced in self-discipline and an intense desire to attain moral excellence that they are in no way inferior to true philosophers. And that was non-Christians, pagans, talking about Christians. This is what they saw. They had an influence. When Rome finally allowed Christianity and outlawed a lot of their more barbaric laws, what percentage of Roman citizens were Christian? Less than 5%. But that little tiny minority, because of the way they lived, had a huge influence on what was at the time a worldwide empire. I found it interesting. We have new member classes here just about every year. They're what, 5 weeks? 5 or 6. Okay. You people that were here when Art was here, how long were new member classes? They were 26 weeks. We think that's horrible. How long was a new member class in the Roman Empire? They had a pre-baptismal study period in which they trained them and also studied their lifestyle for 3 years before they were allowed to be baptized into the church. We think 26 weeks is horrible. Five is a stretch, and we have a lot of people who can't make all five meetings. But 3 years. Now, I think part of that was they wanted to make sure that these people really wanted to become Christians and weren't just trying to get inside information, because they weren't invited to the meeting until they were baptized. But, I mean, that's how committed these people were, that they were willing to go through 3 years of training. And the other part of it was the Romans quickly figured out that threatening to kill a Christian didn't work in terms of converting them back to paganism. So what did they do? They threatened to kill their family. And there are multiple recordings of families pleading with their Christians not to give in to save their lives, because that wasn't important. I mean, if somebody held a knife to your loved one's throat, what would you do? Well, if you have a lot of faith in Christ, it's like, and you know they're believers, it's like, well, you know, like I've said at times, what are you going to do? Kill me? I mean, I'm going to heaven. That's not a bad idea. I can't kill myself, but I'm not worried about it. But that was part of what the Christians were. And that had an intense influence on the Romans around them. There was a case where they were killing Romans or Christians in what was Carthage, like the name of the Roman town. But they had a big arena and they were murdering Christians. And this one woman who'd become a Christian she wouldn't die. In fact, they sent animals out there and they wouldn't kill her. And they finally sent the head of the governor sent one of the soldiers down there, and he hesitated to kill her. I think she finally convinced him that he needed to do it or he was going to get killed. So, but the fact was that even the death of these people impressed the Romans considerably, that they were willing to give up their life for this. And it's one of the big proofs of the truth of Christianity, is you look at these people, or especially the apostles. Because people will say, well, you know, resurrection was a conspiracy. Would you really die for that conspiracy? But all of the apostles, as far as we can tell, with the exception of maybe John, were martyred. Killed. And not pleasantly. I mean, history tells us that Peter was supposedly crucified upside down. Bad enough to be upright doing that. But the fact was that, you know, and people say, you really think that all of these guys and probably several hundred other disciples would die for a conspiracy if they knew it was a conspiracy? Just one of them had to give it up, and none of them would. But the fact is that Christianity has civilized the uncivilized. Until now, and we're pushing the Ten Commandments out of school, so guess what? Kids don't any longer see when they come down the hall that says, thou shalt not kill. So what do we have? We have school shootings. We have, I mean, probably 3/4 of all the murders in the city of Pittsburgh, and we have quite a few, are done by kids. Teenagers. Because, you know, it's horrible to have the Ten Commandments out there that tells you you can't do those kinds of things. That's not fair. And the rest of the world can't get democracy like we know it and we're losing it because they don't know Christ.